Do you remember that Phil the Fourth Day when we met Tayan?
I do. It rained almost as much as my holiday in Spain last week.
Excellent. Did you have a nice time?
Yes.
Oh.
Hello.
Hello.
How you doing?
We're back.
We are back. We had a couple of weeks off.
Yeah, get you.
Yeah, I've been on holiday.
I've been on the toilet, most of it.
Yeah, I bet you had more sunshine than I did. I was. I took Matt down to Spain.
Oh.
And when you take Matt on holiday, you pretty much have to drive him somewhere.
Yes.
Because he is, well, his wheelchair is very, very heavy.
Yes, very big.
And he's got very little sort of trunk control, so he can't really sit upright in a chair that isn't his wheelchair. So if you take him on an aeroplane, basically you've got to have one person on each side of him holding him up the entire time. Otherwise he's going to lay sideways on the aeroplane. And the cabin crew tend to get a bit irritated by that, because he looks like a tray table. Anyway, so we drove all the way down to Spain. So on the first day we drove here in Peterborough down to Bourges in France, or Bourges if you're from Peterborough, because we've got Bourges Boulevard.
That's lovely.
And thank it's you. Twinned.
Is it?
With Peterborough.
Oh dear.
There is an Avenue de Peterborough in Bourges.
Is there?
Yes, there is. Oh. And it's got a multi-story car park like Bourges Boulevard.
So it should.
Yes, it does. So we went there, had a night there, had some dinner, stayed in a, like a roadside hotel.
Mm-hmm.
That is like mobilising an army with Matt, because you've got all of his equipment, you've got his chair, you've got, you know, collapsible table that he carries around with him and all sorts of stuff. And then obviously there's like four other people there, including me as well, on this trip. Then we get back in the car next day and we drive all the way from Bourges down to a place called
Swaffham.
No, Malgrat de Mar.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, the very famous Malgrat de Mar.
Never heard of it.
No, exactly. It's very nice.
Yeah.
Well, I say it's very nice. One end of it is very nice. The other end of it looks like Skegness.
Excellent.
And not in a good way.
Oh, dear.
Including the weather.
Oh, doubly.
Which was like that all week. Anyway, so we did that week. We popped into Barcelona for a day. That was my mum's birthday.
Yeah, nice.
Had a lovely walk around. The sun came out that day, so that was nice. And then we had the rest of the week rain bathing by the pool.
Lovely.
And then we drove back in a thunderstorm.
Ah.
And we went to Paris on the last night, got wet, had some dinner, and then came home on Sunday. So that was my holiday.
What's this got to do with the podcast?
Well, I thought we could talk about
road trips.
Yeah, but probably less glamorous and or current, for that matter. I thought we could talk about the times that we've done road trips for going to Comic Cons.
Okay.
And the challenges we've had in carting Matt or Jonathan or Jimmy off to different events.
Okay.
And maybe we could discuss, you know, some of the things that people need to think about when they're setting their own Comic-Con up.
Okay.
In terms of accessibility for travel and that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about the first Comic-Con you went to and how you got there.
Ooh, the first one I probably went to, I'm thinking, would have been either me or me and my dad, and it would have been London, I think. And it would have been a treat, because even though I could say to myself, I'm not going to spend a lot of money, you've still got to pay to get in, and you've still got to get train fare, and you've still got to get food. And then when you get there, you see everything that you want, and obviously you're limited, you can't buy stuff. So there was a set of things, I think. One of them that I can think of, an early one, Elvira was there, and I wanted to meet her. So that was why I went. It was okay. It was, you know, the trains were not reliable. A lot of queuing, a lot of waiting around, a lot of overpriced stuff. I don't think I brought anything apart from I got a signed picture with Elvira, which is why I went, but everything else was too out of.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I might have got a Muppet DVD.
So this was just you and your dad?
Yeah.
No Jimmy in tow at that time. No Matt or Jonathan. No. How hard was it for you to get down there? So you go down there from Peterborough?
Yes. And I met Dad in London. So, yeah, doable.
Doable on the doable, train. On your own.
Yeah, on my own.
But expensive.
Depending on the day, because the day always something happens and the trains are delayed or...
Every single
there's
time.
Leafs on the line or
every
something.
Single time I go to London, there's something.
And they put the prices up every day.
Yeah, first class tickets now are really expensive.
Yeah. Well, I just think when I used to live in Kent for a London travel card, it used to be £2.50.
Yeah, it's bonkers, isn't it? I mean,
it's about £50 now.
Yeah, I know.
You?
Yeah, yeah.
Not happening.
Yeah, no. It's a bit mad.
So it's.
The thing is, other countries, it's not that expensive to do this sort of stuff. And some places, it's free. Some places, all the public transport is completely free. But, you know...
It is. It's a nightmare.
I've taken... Well, you will know, I don't use the bus very often.
No.
Because I can drive a car. But you don't drive.
No.
And the one time I tried to convince you to learn to drive, you told me the story about what happened when you did learn to drive.
Yeah, I drove into a pond.
Yeah. Do you want to elaborate on that? For
not
the
particularly, no.
No,
okay. it was proper in the pond.
In the pond.
Yeah, I've not been back to Bury St Edmunds since. I haven't.
Did they get the car out again?
Yeah, they had to get people to get the car out. There was ducks in it and everything.
So
the water was...
That put you up for driving. Yeah. And and so whenever we've been anywhere, I've always done the driving.
Yeah, obviously, because I can't.
No, because you can't. Or, well, you could, but we wouldn't get there very much.
No,
we'd
probably
end
get
up in
wet.
A pond. Yeah, that's how it works. when we've done Comic-Cons with the guys, we've normally gone as... a fundraising crew.
Yeah.
So we've gone to like LFCT, for example.
Yeah.
Which not every year, but most years was at Olympia.
Yeah.
And at LFCT, you've got to get yourself from Peterborough to Kensington.
Yeah.
You got to park up with the guys.
Yeah.
All that entails.
Got to pay parking in London.
Pay parking in London. Although if you've got a disabled badge, you don't always need to, but it's often
depends.
Tricky. Mm-hmm. But I remember the shifts that we used to put in for this. So an LFCC weekend for me was I'd get up on the Thursday, I'd have a morning at home or at work doing whatever I was doing. Lee and I would leave my place around lunchtime to get there for about 6 p.m.
Yeah.
So we could set up the stand. It's about 3.5 hours drive from Peterborough to Olympia, 3 hours on a good run, maybe. So we get going to Olympia around lunchtime. We get there with the traffic on the first day, normally around sort of 5-6 o'clock. We'll then set up the stand. And because of the nature of the people who come with us as volunteers, we can't really do hotels in London.
No.
It's... Well, very expensive.
Yeah, it's not happening.
Also, for Matt, when he comes, completely inaccessible. For Jimmy, you'd have to have someone with him the whole time.
Yeah.
So it becomes really difficult to do. So we made a decision early on that we were just going to drive there each day and hope to kind of share out the privilege of driving, which then ended up being me doing the driving. So my day at LFCC, after that Thursday, on the Friday, I'd get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I'd get myself as ready as I could while my eyes were shut and I was still half asleep. I would leave the house at the latest by about 5:45. I'd drive all around Peterborough picking up
everyone,
our various volunteers and people coming with. Eventually we leave Peterborough probably around 6:15, something like that, and I drive all the way to Olympia.
Yeah.
We normally get there at that time of day just before 9 to start the stand in time for opening. We then do a whole day on the Friday, closes at 6, break down everything we need to break down, money boxes in the car and things like that, cart everybody back up, and we won't get in the door until probably 9:30, 10 o'clock
if
I get
lucky.
Home by then.
Yeah.
Quick bite to eat, go to bed, get up the next morning at 5.
Oof.
Same thing again on the Saturday.
I don't miss it.
Same thing again on the Saturday. And then on the Sunday, same thing again, except it finishes at 5.
Yeah.
And we have to break down the entire stall.
Yeah.
And take everything home.
Yeah.
And on top of that, we normally have three or four cars that day because we don't have space in the car for everyone to come down in that one vehicle.
Wheelchairs
for,
and stuff.
We need it for the equipment that we're taking back. So that is our trip to LFCC.
It's funny because when you look at it, it's as good as it is bad.
I mean, I always enjoyed LFCC as an event.
Oh, yeah.
In hindsight.
And we sort of, we got perks from that, from being there. Things happened that wouldn't have happened if we'd have just gone.
We've got lots of stories, haven't we?
Yeah.
Loads of course. Stories.
But it's, you know, fundraising, did it help a little bit? It sort of got the word out, but I don't think we was millionaires, was we?
No, we definitely weren't millionaires. No. I always framed it in a certain way, which is if I took every single person that volunteered and got them a day working at McDonald's, would they have earned more on minimum wage at McDonald's than we raised fundraising that day? And we have never had a day fundraising where we'd have earned more fundraising than if we'd just worked in McDonald's.
Right.
It's always been, we'd always have been better off just giving the money from a day's pay.
It's more about, McDonald's. I think you'll get maybe two or three people out of 10 that really get it. And then you'll get the rest that sort of go, oh, yeah, yeah, then just walk away.
But then that is, I lost count of the number of people that we interacted with. That first year we did LFCC, the year it was at Earl's Court.
Yeah.
Set up our stand. They gave us this little slot at the front that I don't think we were supposed to really have anything special going on.
No, I think my dad was there for that one, helping.
He was for a bit,
and Jimmy, I think Jimmy might have been there.
Jimmy came down as well, yeah.
Helping with a tombola.
And so did Stan Lee.
Yeah, yes, I remember that.
Got to meet Stan Lee.
Oh, what a mission that was, but that was full of all sorts of...
Well, you got to meet him by taking Jimmy to meet him. I got to meet him because it was the press event right behind me and I got to meet him.
Yeah.
There he was.
He was stood right, which is... Yeah. Wish we'd have known Stan. That.
That's amazing.
It would have saved us all the queuing. I was queuing with Jimmy.
Ironically, back in the day, I had no idea who Stan Lee was. So I just knew... Lee said to me, it's Stan Lee in there. I'm like, who's that?
Yeah.
And then I found out he wrote all the Marvel comics.
Yeah, and he kept falling asleep.
And he kept
I don't know
asleep.
How old he was, but he was...
He was late 80s, early 90s at that point.
Yeah, he was... Falling asleep. Everyone was moaning that he was falling asleep, but he's an old guy.
I guess the point I'm trying to make is, for the pain of the travel, it's always been worth it in terms of the outcome.
Yeah.
Because you can't... Fundraising is one part of it, but that networking and that opportunity to meet people and the number of pictures we've got of really, really, really famous people holding a sign saying, I support Field of Force Day. And that sort of stuff is priceless.
Yeah, it is. And it's nice for the guys as well, because the guys... get to do their bit. That's their...
So, yeah, I reckon on balance, it's always been better to have done these events than not to have done these events.
Yeah.
But they are really hard work.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the nature of, you know, the people that we take and the way that we have to do them.
But...
And they've always been hard.
Because of that, you know, we get to see people and the guys get to do their bit by... going up to meet the celebrities, telling them about our day, see if they will hold the sign. And then that's them helping us. We can't do that. We can, but it's not... It doesn't mean anything if we do it.
No.
But if the guys go and do it...
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned last time about the relationship Matt's got with Danny John-Jules.
Yeah, yeah.
And I listened back to that, which is weird listening to yourself on a podcast.
Yeah, I heard it about four times.
Yeah,
I
normally
you played
do.
It on the way to George's funeral.
Yeah, yeah,
and then
right.
Claire played it.
Oh no, this was
when
the one after. This is the one after that. The one we did last time was a Q&A, and you were talking about Danny John-Jules and his relationship with Matt, where Matt keeps trying to chuck him out.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, he keeps trying to chuck Matt out of things. Well, we'd never have any of that if we hadn't gone to those events.
No.
You know,
you build that repertoire up.
You do. You have to.
And we haven't seen him for years, but you know, if we turned up,
I guarantee
with Matt,
it. Every time.
He'd kick off at him.
Yep, he'll do the same thing again.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's that kind of building of those relationships. And then also, on top of that, the number of people that we have sort of met in doing those events who end up being visitors to Field of Force Day as well.
Yeah.
So they are, I don't know, you name it, but basically get a conversation with them. And if they are part of the, you know, our demographic, suddenly there's a realisation there's something out there for me.
Yeah.
So it's hard, but it's worth it.
Yeah, of course it is.
So the thing I really wanted to talk about, if it's hard for us, when we go in and just, you know, once or twice a year we're doing another Comic-Con and we're going to go and sit there for the time. Imagine what it's like if you're a fan.
Mm.
Imagine what it's like if you're somebody who genuinely enjoys going to these events, but you have a disability like Matt or Jonathan or Jimmy.
Then you've got 101 extra problems in the way.
I nearly did a Jay-Z lyric then.
that will hinder the day. See, when we go and there's problems, you deal with them, and they might not make you happy. They might get you annoyed, but you do what you can.
You persevere and you get over it, don't you?
Yeah, whereas, you know, you might get to a venue and it's not accessible, or there's only one step, yeah, but it's too big. And that makes all the difference between them going in and not going in.
When we were in Barcelona last week, we went to Parkway, which is this park at the top of the hill. It's designed by Gaudi, who's an architect famous in Barcelona.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got all these like winding snake-like paths that go up the side of the hill, and it's really pretty and beautiful and the sort of place you want to visit. I took Matt up this path, and up we went, this winding path, and it was like 10-15 minutes walk to get from the bottom to the top. Completely level access, just a slope, and up we go, right until the very top.
Excellent.
When there were two stairs.
Why would you do that?
And I was looking at it going, I could have just smoothed that bit out. It just would have made everything so easy.
Yeah. Well,
and they didn't. So in the end, rather than doing 15 minutes back down the hill with Matt, I managed to grab this Spanish guy who spoke no English, but basically sign, are you strong? Can you help? And he came and helped me. And we picked Matt up, four of us.
In
his chair, because it took one on each wheel. And even then it was like one step at a time. Hoiked him up these two stairs, and then off he went, and we're in the level area again, but all for two stairs. Now, imagine you've done, you know, a two-hour journey to London, or more than that if you live further away than here.
Yeah.
Two-hour journey to London. You've got down through the train station, all the way to King's Cross. You've got off the train
that's a mission
with
a
special
in yourself.
Assistance.
You might not be able to get the tube there, depending on where you're coming in. You might have to get a taxi.
I took Matt to Piccadilly Circus once. We had to get off at Green Park.
Yeah.
That was the nearest accessible.
Because of the way it's built up there, and they can't change it.
Because it was built in Victorian times, and that's that. You can get down and up in King's Cross, but there's three lifts and you're always occupied.
Mm.
So you have to wait your turn. Imagine you're doing that every weekend because you're a fan of this stuff.
It's a nightmare. Well, I don't think you could. You might do it once, and then because you've done it once, you might not want to do it again.
Well, and so that's why, you know, we exist.
Yeah.
So when you come to feel the full state, not to blow our own trumpet or anything like that, but, you know... the train station is, what, 10-minute walk?
Yeah.
From the cathedral?
And it's... Is it flat?
Entirely flat. Yeah. Entirely flat if you go the right way. There are places you could end up hitting a stair or something.
But it can be done without stairs or lifts.
And you're not going further. You're going the same distance.
Yeah.
The venue itself is completely flat and accessible. There are hotels right nearby that are flat and accessible because we recorded all that beforehand. So
the stuff to buy on the day is right across the board.
Completely accessible.
So from like 50p upwards.
And we're open to be told where we could do better.
Yeah, yeah.
Completely open to do better if you think there's something we could do better.
Mm, yeah, because like we say, we don't know everything. We're constantly learning, and that's the whole point of it.
There we are.
Just to keep trying to make it better.
So, at that point, I reckon it's a good moment to take a break.
Ah, okay.
And we'll come back to this after you've had yet more flipping rice cakes. Why do you keep bringing these things?
I've had a finger of fudge.
Delightful.
And I'm drinking a can of Lucozade, which is making me burp.
See you in a minute.
Bye-bye. Are we back?
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back. Did you have a lovely rice cake?
Yeah, it was all right.
Was it Lucozade flavoured?
Yeah, it was delicious.
With a finger of fudge.
I burped. We were all right.
Yeah, you could hear your voice actually getting a bit deeper. Yeah. So.
Where was we?
We were talking about travelling.
Yeah.
Going to other events and things like that.
Okay.
Now, I keep equating this back to the holiday I've just had with Matt, because it's the reason we're talking about this is because of that road trip that I just did. So when we were travelling, we had to book ourselves accommodation everywhere we went.
Yeah.
And you go on to, like, I use an app to book hotels, get mm-hmm. special points for it, that sort of stuff. When you go on there, there's options to ask for accessibility. And you can select, like, stair-free access, requires a lift, in-room accessibility, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But you don't really know what if it's true until you get there and they go, oh, not monsieur, he's up a set of stairs.
Because
everyone's got different disabilities and everybody... And sometimes these hotels just lie.
Yeah, well, they might say that it's just a handrail on the wall.
Yeah. The one I love is contact us for any special assistance requests and then they never come back to you.
Excellent.
That's great. Anyway, the point I'm making is whenever I travel anywhere with Matt, and I've done this trip a few times now, I did it with you about 11 years ago and I've done it before, you're always taking a bit of a risk. Because while we know on the way there that we'll be okay, because the hotel we stayed in Bourges is one we've stayed in several times before.
Yeah.
And we know the road down there, there's motorway services that we can get Matt out at and he'll be fine and that sort of stuff. We know where to go. When you get there, you're always taking a risk.
Mm.
And for me, that equates across to somebody who is travelling to, you know, another Comic-Con somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, they might be able to sort out their special assistance when they're on the train. They might know where all the tube stations are, where they can use a lift or whatever that might entail.
But then... They get there.
And they don't know.
And there's 45 stairs to get in.
And a queue of 10,000 people. And no chill-out space.
Yeah.
And
no one's listening to you because you're in a wheelchair.
Yeah. Do you want sugar? Do they want sugar in their tea?
That's the one. You're just walking around looking at people's arses all day.
All day long.
Yeah.
And that is really where a lot of what we do comes from, isn't it? It's that kind of...
It's annoying because it's not... Most of it's not rocket science. It's not even having to go out of your way that much to make a big difference, but still people don't do it.
I think I always equate it back to the money side of things, because if you have to give up, you know, 10 foot of space somewhere to make it more accessible to people to get in, that's 10 foot of space where you could have probably stuck 2 or 3 stalls.
Yeah.
And therefore that's, you know, 10 foot of space that could have paid you, you know, a big event. It's another £1,000, £2,000, whatever it is for those 3 stalls for the weekend. So you're giving up money for what is seemingly a small amount of space, but actually...
Yeah. Or if you fill that space with celebrities, then that's more money coming in.
Yeah. £50,000, £100,000, depending on what you've got.
Depending who it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tricky, and I get the whole contradiction there is there. You've got to create an event that's financially sustainable.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you're ostracising entire communities of people because you're trying to profiteer from it, there's something fundamentally wrong there, as far as I'm concerned.
Me being me, I've often been at Comic Cons and I've seen guys in wheelchairs like sat to the side, just having a breather because it's too much.
Me and Matt have been the guys in wheelchairs. Matt's in the wheelchair, but I'm sat with him. We've been the guys.
Because you can't walk around and you can't get to places and just like you're not there.
I remember one event where we were just going along the stalls, and if Matt was looking at the stall, nobody else could look at the stall.
No.
And which meant that Matt basically just travelled up and down the aisles because he couldn't get to half the stalls because there were people pushing in the way and getting there.
Yeah.
And that was it. We just did the aisles.
Yeah.
And that was it. It's all we could possibly hope to do.
A nightmare, isn't it?
But, yeah. So, on that, we have a following for Feel the Force Day that comes from, well, actually, all over the world.
Mm.
When I've looked in the past at ticket sales, they've been booked in America, they've been booked across Europe, they've been booked all over the place. But just assuming, there's not a lot I can do about air travel, and trust me, I'd like to, but just assuming it's people from all over the UK trying to come to our event, and they do, because I can see that as well. They have to travel down from Scotland, up from, you know, the southwest and Cornwall.
The Isle of Wight.
The Isle of Wight. Thank you, Aaron and guys.
Yeah.
All over the place to come and come to our event.
Mm-hmm.
So in the past, we've tried to sort of roll out more local events to people as well, haven't we?
We've tried.
We've done some really, really good ones that I really enjoyed over the years. The one that stands out for me is probably Plymouth, I thought that was a really good one that we did with Andy and Louisa. I've got to
try and think now.
Andy and Louisa down there.
Oh, yes. We went out the night before. Oh, I can remember a boat dock.
Yeah, that's right.
There was a boat dock and we had a greasy burger and there was a very small magic shop there, but it was shut.
I don't remember the magic shop, but then I wouldn't, would I?
But no, that was a good one because...
Yeah, I enjoyed that one.
And let me think. It was... For me, it was... All the people that were there were the people that we wanted there.
Yeah.
And I remember that because... There was loads of guys everywhere and it weren't like, you know, Bob and Jean and... It was proper disabled people that would struggle at a normal con.
Yeah, I think... And that's
and there was loads of them.
Yeah, it was like everybody from that area, because Plymouth is a, what, 6-8 hour drive from here? Depends on the traffic's like, but it's a flipping long way.
Mm.
And so you would have to be going out your way to come to us.
Yeah.
And it isn't something you can easily do on the train.
No.
So I always thought, you know, putting events on around the country was a good way of doing it.
Yeah.
And I talked a little bit last time about that idea of maybe having a localised model and then a big central event as well. And I'd still love to do that. It always comes back to the same thing, though, which is money.
Yeah.
Is there enough money to do
this? Yeah, that was a good one. It's all coming back to me now.
And we've tried different approaches as well, haven't we? Do you remember we did Feel the Force stay in... Bridgewater twice.
Yeah, in the shopping centre.
In the shopping centre. Twice we did that. Yeah, we did that twice. They were really good events. And probably in terms of footfall, the biggest ones we ever did. But yeah, obviously because it's a shopping centre.
In the middle of a shopping centre. Yeah. So they had no choice but to be there.
Yeah, we kind of took the place over, didn't we?
Yeah. No, that was good. Yeah, I remember that one. And we had cars and all sorts.
All sorts of stuff, yeah. Yeah. So there's different models we can take this through. You know, there's different ways of doing this particular event.
Mm-hmm.
I go back to when we were looking at doing the event in London, and the venue we'd actually booked for it was the Velodrome at the Olympic Park, which is a cracking venue.
Yeah, it was a bit of a beast.
It wouldn't have been too difficult for us to fill. We could easily have done it. obviously, we had some personal stuff go on back then. That's the reason we pulled it. But it was a... potentially a really massive and interesting event in a really interesting venue.
I would have loved to have done a massive wheelchair race around that track on the day.
On the banking. That would have been amazing.
That would have been epic.
We'd have had a massive wheelchair crash.
We would have been thrown out, but it would have been good.
And then a need for a lot of very accessible ambulances. Brilliant.
No, that was a... And where was the other place? Didn't we check out a basketball place?
Oh, yeah, that's... That was the copper box.
Wasn't the rent, like, all the money in the world, wasn't it? Like,
it was at the time, yeah. I mean, we did...
I can't think what it was now, the showgrounds
was more
nearly
expensive in the end, but that was something like £33,000 for the day. Because at that point, you're looking at a London venue and it would have been a perfect venue for an event like ours.
Yeah.
Because it was all one level, all accessible, but it's also completely, it's like a blank canvas you can use.
Was it part of the Olympic Village?
Yeah, it's a copper box.
Because part of that was, they had like a little Ewok village with tree houses.
And that was right next to the Velodrome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was amazing. I've got those pictures, actually.
Yeah. They were good.
I thought that was something we could make
sometime.
Yeah,
that was fun.
And actually, just up the road from that little Ewok village play park thing was a... disability community centre, basically. And there was this community.
Didn't we go? We went there.
We went there to have a look around and see what they were about and try and get them on board. And they were up for it.
Yeah. I remember that now. God, that was so long ago.
I'd love to have done it. And I still would like to do it.
Who knows, mate?
I think the problem is money.
Yeah.
Always money.
At the moment, I'm getting messages left, right, and centre. Do you want me to come back? Blah, blah, blah. From guests. But I know you're keen to say, oh, we're doing one next year, and we probably will. But until the funding is in place, I get nervous to say anything.
Well, we are going to do one next year, subject to the money.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's why I don't want to say...
We've got the date penciled in with the cathedral, so we are going back.
And it's nice that people are itching. They're like, oh, we want to come back. We really want to come back.
And we want everyone to come back. But it's going to, again, it comes back to the same thing, which is if we can't make enough money on the day to cover the event, well, Muggins is paying out the money to cover the event.
That can't be happening.
Again. So it's just, it becomes a kind of...
Last year we was lucky and we got funding.
We did.
For 17,000?
£16,950.
Right, okay. From Cambridge Community Foundation. That gives people an idea of roughly what it cost.
That's, yeah, and that didn't cover all the costs.
No.
That covered most of the costs, but not all the costs.
No.
But then there was on top of that, because we were bringing it back from what, a five-year hiatus, there were costs that we incurred that we wouldn't have to again this year, like all of our point-of-sale equipment.
Stuff.
Banners were all out of date because Just Giving, in the meantime, had killed the text-to-donate thing, and all of our banners had that on, so we had to get all our banners reprinted. The point-of-sale equipment, all those iZettle things that we had, they've all now
expired and
died. And all of that
stuff's important because it helps make it accessible.
Yeah, well, we need people to be able to
know where they're going,
whatever way
and
they can do.
Cool.
All the signage is important, everything. But so we won't have to pay for those things again this year. Maybe some things if we've got new stuff that we want to present on the day. But, you know, certainly we're not at the scale we had to this year.
No.
But nevertheless, it's still, you know, that's not the most of the cost.
Mm.
The cost is other things as well.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, of course. You've got to pay transport and food and
transport, food, storage, hotels, venue costs.
We get
AV equipment.
The odd item donated for touch tables and stuff. But last year it was very difficult to get tombola prizes and stuff because we'd lost the momentum.
And that kind of brings me back round to another point that we discussed. So we have our committee. That in the lead up to the event, they meet every couple of weeks and we sort of go through actions that need to be taken and things like that. Really good bunch of guys. Rachel, who we spoke to last time, is part of that committee doing all the social media for us and other guys as well who I'm sure our listeners will meet as time goes by.
When we rope them in.
When we rope them in to come talk to us. Or chuck them in the boot of my car and drag them off here because they don't want to be on the radio. And we were talking about going to LFCC as the example, and it being a way that we could build momentum as well. It's back to that point around, it's not just about the fundraising, it was about the networking.
Yeah,
it's about getting a name out there that people start to recognize again.
Yeah,
it's about bringing in new visitors to the events, potentially new guests, and if not a new guest, then a new person supporting as a guest.
I'm determined to get a Doctor Who at some point.
Yeah, I'd love one. Capaldi, please, and I'll finally get my tea towel signed.
Anyone? No, any of them?
No, got to be Capaldi. I don't like Doctor Who enough for it to be anyone else.
Paul McGann, it might be Sheba.
It's not just about going out there and shaking a bucket.
No.
But that is an important part from our perspective.
Yeah.
It's also about, you know, developing the means to put on the best possible event that we can put on.
Yeah.
And on top of that, making our event as much or as close to a mainstream Comic-Con as we can.
Yeah.
Without losing any of that accessibility.
And although it sounds like I'm blowing our trumpet, but without us, the guys haven't got that in their lives.
Yeah.
They've got something vaguely like it if they went to a con, but they wouldn't get near stuff. It wouldn't work for them. And it might be too much for them mentally and emotionally to deal with that.
So my kind of ethos on this really is I'm trying to create a Comic-Con that feels just like any other Comic-Con, but it's effortless.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about space. You don't have to worry about whether there's somewhere to change.
That will come in time, when we've ironed out all the little things that we don't know about.
There'll always be something about it, not least because we market ourselves in the way that we do.
It's our way of thinking. Yeah. We don't know any different.
No, but this is my point. I want someone to walk into that event, and if you're not someone with a disability, come in and just have a nice time because it's a good event to come to.
Because it's a comic.
And you don't even notice the accessibility that is built into it, but the people who need it know it's there, experience it, and it's just made easier for them. So it's just an effortless event to come to regardless of your physical disability.
And that's what it needs to be. It needs to be just like a Comic-Con. We're not leaving things out because they're disabled.
No.
Or any of that, you know, or you can't have this and you can't have that and you can't. We can, you know, they're grown-ups. You go to a normal con, your lad Bob dressed up as Leatherface from the Chainsaw Massacre, and nobody says anything.
No, but at ours we had to have a policy for that.
Yeah, but the guys that come to ours are aware of that.
Yeah,
the costumers.
Yeah,
so they know that if they scare someone, that there's, you know, maybe a place for them to be or a set place for them to be.
Yeah.
We shouldn't, you know, because if we strip away everything that might offend or upset, or then what are we going to have?
So this is interesting, you know, because I just thought, you'd think about all the other Comic-Cons that we've been to and also the ones that we have run, the different Field of Force days, yeah, across the place. There's an equivalence to be achieved, right? So I always think of our event, we started around about the same time as MCon in Nottingham.
Yeah.
We were about the same size.
Yeah.
And we've kind of grown up alongside that event. Lee doing the work he does over there. He's a good one.
Yeah, yeah. We've had some good days there.
And yeah, we've had brilliant days. And also we've worked really closely with him to like help him develop more access to his event because he was keen to do it. So I think of our event as a kind of almost like an equivalence to that.
Yeah.
But not all of our events that we've done over the years have been of that scale.
No. No.
You know, you go to some other Comic-Cons and they're in a school on a Saturday afternoon and it's a one-man band running it and it's just basically the school gym full of market stands and a few guys dressed up.
Yeah.
And they might make a few bob out of that.
Yeah.
Well, we've done events that are a similar sort of scale to that, again, done differently and done more accessibly.
Yeah, we've done
than
some
that particular
quiet
event.
Events.
Yeah, we've done some really quiet events. Thank you to the rain on that one in particular. And yet come out of it meeting Tayen and the rest of the family.
Yeah.
And
which was a winner.
Which was an absolutely brilliant moment for us.
Yeah, yeah. But the rest of the day was very quiet.
Very, very quiet. It was a lot of us just mucking around for photos, as I recall.
Yeah, yeah.
and honestly, because it was that particular event was down in Corsham, I don't even know why Tayen and her family came, because it's not close to Bridgewater. Really, it's closer than here, but it's not that close to Bridgewater.
No.
But they came anyway.
But that's the first time we met them.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we've sort of followed us since.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. But it was like it was meant to be, because she got a lot out of it.
So I guess what I'm saying is, as long as we continue to try and, you know, we're not trying to do, I've said before I'd like to, but we're not trying to do an LFCC or an MCN.
No, no, no. It wouldn't work.
We're not trying to do like such a big event that we've got 100,000 people coming to it throughout the weekend.
That wouldn't work either.
I mean, I'd love it to be the case, but I don't quite see how, either in terms of accessibility, finance, or any other thing that goes with it. But we do have an equivalence to other events that are across the country.
Hmm.
And I think as long as we are aware that, you know, what we're actually aiming for throughout the work that we do, then we'll be okay.
Despite being one of the many Comic-Cons that are out there, we are in our own niche.
Strange, isn't it?
So we are a Comic-Con, but we are not like any other Comic-Con. Even though we're trying to be the same as everyone else.
Even though we're trying to be
like everyone
else.
That doesn't make any sense at all. I'm completely confused there.
Yeah, this is an interesting juxtaposition.
Yeah, well, it is. It's because we're trying to be the same as them, but we're far from it. There's, you know, lots of other stuff that we need to think about to make our day work.
Yep.
In order for it to feel like one of the other cons.
I think that's it, isn't it? We just want to... I go back to as much like a mainstream Comic-Con as possible, but effortless accessibility throughout.
Yeah.
From the moment you leave your house all the way to where you get to with us, everything that we can think of, we'll try and think of.
It's covered.
And it's covered. And if we can't do anything about it, at least we can be open about the fact we can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
I'll give you a really good example. First year we did it at the PSL Club.
Yeah.
I remember you and Claire getting a bus to the PSL Club and the two of you photographing every stop, every change, every single step of the way, and did a little storyboard for someone who was visiting on how they get to the event from wherever they're going from.
Because it was a bit of a weird venue, really.
It was beaten track and it was out the back behind Thistlemore Road Surgery GP practice. on a bit of wasteland with holes in the car park and that's no accessible toilet. And about six pool tables. And yet everyone got there. On the bus. Because they could.
And also that, you know, went through the roof with regards for visitors. And that was just done on Facebook.
Yeah.
There was no newspapers or posters or anything.
But basically, as far as possible, you took into account all the things that might need to be done to make things accessible to people, as far as you reasonably could. And I think that's all we're really saying.
Yeah.
As far as reasonably possible, do it. And reasonable's contextual to what you're trying to aim for. But for us, it is to make it universally as accessible as possible.
Yeah.
And to be constantly evolving to make it better.
Yeah.
But we are, where we are always trying to move closer to a mainstream convention, what we really need is for mainstream conventions to be trying to move closer to us.
Mm.
And then we're looking at better access for everybody.
If that will ever happen.
And that's why we're here.
Yeah.
To disrupt it. Anyway.
Is that it? Have we waffled enough?
I think we've waffled enough tonight.
I think we have.
Same time next week?
Yeah. I might find a guest for next week.
I've heard.
Oh.
Stay tuned.
Okay, I will.
No, not you, them.
Oh, right, okay.
Anyway.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
How to Build a Comic Con was hosted by Simon Howard and JJ Lucia Wright. It was recorded and produced at the Peterborough Community Radio Studios in Hurlington, Orton, Melbourne, Peterborough.